This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Darius Thomas.
If you can hoop on the double rim, you're a hooper.
Brock Rahm.
Clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose.
And Karina Anglada.
And on that note...
Life's unexpected turns can lead us to our true calling, especially when you're hit with a devastating injury twice. That's the case for Taylor White, director of video production at the University of Virginia. When back-to-back ACL injuries threatened to derail her path, Taylor found inspiration in an unlikely place, a documentary. That moment sparked a creative awakening that would ultimately shape her career. Join us as Taylor shares her journey of turning setbacks into crafting your success. All right, we're going to head over to time.is.
Let's do 03. Yo, that was pretty
good. That was probably the best one we've ever done.
That's clean.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller FX, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit BallerFX on YouTube and get started today.
Welcome you guys to the Creative Sports Podcast. We're back for one of my favorite parts of our season. We are here with Taylor White, the director of video production for UVA Athletics, to kick off our Black History Month spotlights. Taylor, welcome.
What's up? Thank you guys for having me. I'm excited to be here. First one, so.
Welcome.
First one, best one. So we're going to just jump right into it. Give us a little backstory of how you got to where you are today.
So first, started off in high school. I wanted to do some type of video production, video design with sports. Started off playing basketball and running track when I was younger. And then in high school, I tore both of my ACLs. So the first one was my freshman year of college. We were actually in practice preparing for the junior nationals to go to DC. And I did a Euro step and stepped on a girl's foot, tore my ACL. I was screaming, and my dad said he was in the parking lot, and he heard me all the way outside. So after that, obviously, I didn't play in the tournament. And also during that time, I was fastest point guard in the state. So I also, like I said, ran track, and I was, I think, top 5 or 10 in the triple jump. So after that first tear, the doctor said I couldn't triple jump or do long jump anymore. And about a year and a half later, I tore my other ACL. This time, instead of preparing for the Junior Nationals, we were at the Junior Nationals in D.C., and we had just played our last game. It was in the fourth quarter, and I did the same move. I did a Euro step, and instead of the girl going the way I thought she was going to go, she went the other way. And, I just misled. So I tore the other one, and I was laying on the floor. I was screaming and saying, I don't want to go through this again. My parents and coaches were like, what are you talking about? I said, I tore it again. So my dad said, do you want to go to the hospital here, or do you want to go back to Roanoke and have Dr. Miller look at it? I said, I would like Dr. Miller to look at it. So the same day of my appointment, I was actually supposed to be released from my first brace, from my first ACL. And the nurses didn't tell my doctor that, so he came in celebrating, ready to take the brace off. And my mom was like, can you check her other knee? He was like, what? And she said, we think she tore it. And he was pissed. He was pissed at his nurses. He was like, why didn't they tell me? But by the end of the appointment, he told me he knew I was going to tear my other ACL, because when he went in the first knee, which is my right knee, he said my bones are really close together and he had to shave them down. But he didn't want me to play scared after. So, yeah, after that, of course, I was a bionic woman and I had two braces on. It was hard for me to keep up going from fastest point guard in the state to I can't keep up. And my dad, to this day, like, he'll start crying because he said during that time he'd take me to camps and things like that. And sometimes he just wanted to pick me up and drag me off the floor because it was hurtful for him to see me go through that. So what brought me here was, at that time, I seen and figured out, and I went from basketball is my life to I felt like, you know, at my age, I had nothing and I couldn't do anything about it. And I have realized that if I have a story, then everyone else has to have one too. So for me, it was almost like the Lord kind of molded me to love the game, want to play it physically for as long as I could. And he had to sit me down, sit still for me to see the sport I love through a different lens. Obviously, it creates longevity, and I can do this until I'm old and wrinkly. Also, during that time, Derrick Rose, who was a point guard that I admired, he was my role model.
D-Rose, yes.
Let's go.
Yeah, that's D-Rose.
I'm a Chi-Town native, so love him.
Hey, and he's getting his flowers finally now. I'm
literally
all for that.
Yep.
So he was the person that I looked up to 100%. And during that time, the exact same time, he tore his ACL. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Return series on YouTube that Adidas created. But through that, too, while the Lord was sitting me down, I was being still. I wasn't able to do what I love at that time. I was able to study those films that they created for him while also having to watch someone go through their story, their recovery. Because obviously, you know, at my age, I hadn't seen anyone go through a career-ending injury. None of my teammates have, so I didn't have anyone to look up to or see. My parents was unfamiliar with it too. So I feel like during that time is kind of where my journey began, and the Lord kind of slowly introduced me to this world that we're all in right now. So that Return series is very inspirational, how they told his story. He had just gotten an MVP award, was the youngest one ever. And again, like, ball was his life and it was snatched away just like that. So yeah, from there, I played basketball and ran track in college and created videos for different sports and things like that. Once I knew, okay, I'm not going to go pro. And I just kind of poured my heart into the video side of it. Got my master's at Wake Forest through one of my professors, had a great relationship with my professors at Shenandoah, had offers to work at a local news station. But I was like, professor, I don't want to do that.
No,
and
thanks.
He was like, well, he was like, I know the chair at Wake Forest for the doc film program. Why don't you just go there? You know, so I got in quick, went there on a visit. 20 minutes later, they're like, hey, we haven't even posted applications or anything yet, but you're enrolled. And in that same visit, I went over to the football facility, introduced myself, showed them some these videos I created on iMovie from Shenandoah, and was like, hey, I would love to intern with the football program. I'll be in grad school here next semester. Yeah, so that's kind of how that got started. And was at Wake Forest in the doc film program for about a year and a half. Started early applying to places. I had another year to go and had a few interviews at different places. One of them was with UVA. They called me and said I got the job, and I was like, oh no, I have a whole another semester of school left. I was just practicing. And they're like, oh no, we would love for you to come. Like, if you have to miss a game or practice for school or something like that, like, let us know what's up, you know. So I talked to my professors, again, building those relationships with people. And they were like, oh, yeah, we'll just move you online only and we'll make sure that you graduate. So I started my first full-time job during a football season and finishing grad school at UV.
Amazing.
Thank you. And the boss that I had, his name is OC. He was amazing when I felt like I was underwater or I needed help with the project. He helped me out and took on some projects for me. So, yeah, so that definitely a different experience, but it does help when you build those relationships with others, especially, you know, your professors and mentors and people that are, you know, that you're around.
That's awesome. So I got a bunch of stuff that I want to jump into, but I'll save some for the others. So the first place that I'll go is like, okay, so you experienced that during high school. When's the first time that you actually picked up any type of camera to like start playing around with? Or, I mean, during that time, camera phones are still a thing. So did you start on a camera phone? Did you start on GoPro? Like where was the start with the equipment?
Honestly, I started late, my junior year of college. Cause that was when realization set in. I was like, wait a minute, I gotta figure something out. Yeah. So yeah, definitely having everyone else around me helped push me to where I am today. But it was a $500 camera off Amazon. It was a Canon Rebel T6. I still have it to this day. It's just good a photo camera. Hey, yeah. And it came with cards and everything, but yeah, that's my first one.
So what kind of what developed your eye and your storytelling ability? Where did that originally come from? Obviously, you have a great background in sports and you understand the stories there, but then taking that story and putting into something presentable is totally different. So how did that kind of mold happen for you?
Honestly, where it all started was watching the Return series and how they started off with Scenics of Chicago, you know, breaking it down and setting the scene for Derrick Rose. Then they still hadn't shown him yet. They have footage of different kids in the city, then interviewed his family members in different places. And then they went to him and showed his vulnerable side, that intimacy of him struggling, walking out the hospital, then talking to him and gradually, you know, told his story and showed his recovery and things like that. So if I'm being honest, how I got into storytelling and my style now stems specifically from that series, because that's kind of the first thing that I've looked at, ever, you know, been interested in, experienced. So kind of like the basic setting up the scene. And when I was in school, one of my professors taught us about the 3,000 foot level, and you have to set it up before you get into the meat or the subject or, you know, whatever the story is being told from. And I feel like Adidas and the Return series that they created did a great job of that. So
to follow up with that, like as you're watching the Return series, and now I want to go back and watch the Return series. But were you having some of these flashbacks and kind of walking through this and putting yourself kind of in that position and kind of seeing it as, oh, that could have been someone doing that for me. Maybe I can be interested in doing it on the other side. Like what was kind of the mindset while you were watching that?
Yeah. So, like I said, him and I it kind of all happened at the same time. And if I'm being honest, I showed it to my dad. He was like, do you want me to start recording you doing stuff? I was like, no.
Does your dad have a video background?
So he's like a little photographer, but you know how some photographers are, like, especially when they're older, they don't really know what they're doing. So, you know, he got his little camera. He does his thing.
Shout out to Pops, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely did see myself. It's kind of weird because I saw myself as a subject, him, and like, oh, okay, like this is what I'm going through. Or when I do hit this stage of the recovery process, like this is how, you know, I want to go through it, or I can show my physical therapist. But on the other side, I was starting to think from a cinematographer's perspective, like from a different lens, like, oh, it's cool how they set him down in the chair in the dark and kind of just showed him his highlights while he has his knee, you know, propped up and he can't do at all, you know, what he's seeing himself do. So just seeing how they kind of tapped into different things and how different scenes and things were, but it was weird because, like I said, I never knew anything about video or you know, had an eye for that except for this one series, you know, that I started looking at. And it was like my mind clicked and was like, oh, this is a cool shot, but also envisioning myself, you know, doing what he was doing. So
how are you balancing everything when you, because you said you junior year was really when you were like, I need to buckle down and lock in. And then you just share the tail end of your senior year. So really within a 2-year span, you were working full time, finishing your degree. I mean, how did you manage your time during that period while also like learning something new? Like, what was your time management skills like back then?
Honestly, I didn't sleep.
Oh no.
Yeah. So I was a dual sport athlete still during the time. So wake up at 6 a.m., have track practice, have class. I was also a mentor to a little girl in a program that I was in and a part of another association called SBA Student Business Association, where we would travel and I would do camera work for them. And then I was also doing freelance projects on the side for different training facilities around the university. And I was working in athletics communications, making videos and things for them while also working games. So my days were pretty long to go from track practice, class, maybe breakfast, go mentor the little girl, have class again, maybe another class, and then I'll have basketball practice, you know, if we're in the off season, have dinner, then I'll have an SBA meeting after that, and then I'll have to go and shoot a sport, whatever practice it is at night, you know, 6, 7, 8 o'clock, and then I'll go back to my room and edit their video, do homework. So I would go to bed at like 3 or 4 a.m., take a quick nap and wake up for workouts next day. And the coaches would get mad because they knew about it. And I would bring coffee before I would start running, you know, just like something to keep me up. But to this day, I don't know how I did it. But that's kind of how my schedule was.
I can't breathe listening to you. We're all just sitting here.
I couldn't do it today, so.
Yeah, it's nice to be young, right?
Yes.
That part. Can we talk about that for a second? I look back and I'm like, I've seen videos on social media, like, this cannot be the same human being that at, you know, 19, 20, 21 was getting this little amount of sleep or not wearing my coat out and going out to the club and all that. Like, yes. This cannot be the same human being.
So. And then jumping back into an edit at like 1 o'clock and doing your best work, right?
Oh my gosh. I literally would go, you guys, in college, there would be certain nights where I would go out at night and then I would after go straight to work on an edit.
Yep.
And I think that's a lot of student
at 5 in the morning.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Brock and I both participated in some after
so back in the day,
stuff,
before everybody could edit at their laptop, you used to have dedicated edit suites.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, yes.
At HuskerVision, we had 3 of them, but the full-timers booked them during the day, so we could never edit during business hours. So we would go out to the bar, and then when the edit suites would open, we would go back and edit our features.
Yeah, because nobody was in there.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that was like it became a party. I mean, like we all hung out together.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it became such a close-knit community.
See, I was scared and I didn't want anybody to know I was in there at 2, 3, 4, 5 in the morning. And I'm like,
no,
yeah.
They encouraged it because they needed the work done and they knew that the full-timers were going to take up all the edit suite space during the day. So looking back on it, it was kind of insane the level of access we were given to a Division I college athletics facility.
Yes.
Being, you know, like 19 years old.
So true.
But yeah.
But you weren't in there tearing things up, so they trusted you.
We're going to leave some of those stories off to the side, yeah.
Then you're waking up for an 8 a.m. the next day, mm-hmm. rolling in.
Yeah.
Woo! You're fresh, though, right? Because you were young.
That gives me PTSD thinking about college.
I know. I feel like everyone's able to do that at some point. And then when you get older, you look back and you're like, how did I do that?
Now naps are required.
Yes.
Yeah.
Listen, naps were required in college for me at least. I don't know about y'all. Depending on the day.
My naps were at like 11 p.m. Get up at 2, write a paper, then go to class. And yeah. Mm. Yeah. Next question.
No, it leads me to my next question. Like, from looking back at your time as a student and student athlete and doing all those things to now in your day to day full time roles, like, what do you miss about that time as a student? And what do you love now about your day to day role that you're, you know, doing?
What I miss, definitely the naps. And also, too, I'm pretty sure probably all of us could attest to this, but you were surrounded by mentors, professors, counselors, whoever, who made sure you were supposed to be, you know, where we were supposed to at the time that you're supposed to be at. And now as you're older, like, it's like if you wake up late or you're late to a meet, like, that's on you. So it definitely helped to have a circle of people who made sure, especially as a student athlete, like, you have coaches, you know, texting and calling your phone and things like that. So just the support system and people who are for you, celebrate you, appreciate you, who probably see something in you that you wasn't able to see yourself yet, you know, to a point where they would invest in you as a college kid, a college athlete. But also too, I like now, of course, everyone loves, you know, being grown, having your own space, but also growing into yourself and finding yourself, not only, you know, as a person, but as a creative too. And networking, you know, like what we're doing now, meeting new people. And then of course, it's different in college. Like, you're kind of forced to be surrounded by those people who support you. But obviously when you leave, it's kind of different now. But when you do find those people that do care about you and support you, it hits a little harder. And yeah, it feels a lot better. So
I got a multi-layer question here.
So
being a former student athlete, now with the current landscape, I think your time was before NIL. But you're seeing a lot of the current student athletes that you get a chance to work with every day, plus all around the country, becoming content creators. Like, in your day to day, like, what advice could you give to them, or what questions are they coming to you with about what you do, or do they even come to you? Like, what's that like now, seeing athletes who weren't necessarily forced into becoming video or photography people, but now they get to do it kind of on the side?
First, I would tell them, doesn't matter if you're the best player on the team or, you know, you ride the bench, you're always going to have someone reach out to you for content promotion, marketing. And I'm not going to lie, as a content creator, some of them just like don't feel like doing it, or they don't want to do it. Or so I would be like, yo, like, dive into this, because once this is over, that's it. Like, for most of you, your name is through the school. And when you graduate or leave, you know, some of you have, you know, you're blessed enough to continue on with the name that you have with promotions and marketing opportunities. But like, literally use every resource and everything that you can while you're here in college. I mean, at this point, you're making free money while your school is being paid for. I would say that, like, dive into what is going on right now, who wants to invest in you, who wants to use your name, image, and likeness to make you money for your, you know, for what you're doing and, you know, for your benefit. So honestly, that's what I would say.
And is it kind of cool to see, like, more athletes like step into that space? Like, I remember, even, man, it doesn't even feel like 5 years ago since I worked on campus, but just the number of athletes now who are eager to pick up phones or an Osmo or a vlog camera or whatever to create content. like, is it cool to see them kind of stepping into that? And not just as content creators or NIL, but also seeing these as now career opportunities that maybe you saw earlier in, you know, while still playing, and they're like doing it now.
Oh yeah, definitely. Now it's not only just about being an athlete, making sure, you know, you get time on the field, court, whatever, but it's almost like a business now. So with being an athlete, you know, I mean, not saying they have an agent, but they have people who are coming to them saying, hey, can you do this? Like, you're getting paid through this avenue, and you're also getting paid from this, and you have your coach in your ear, you know. So I think it's really cool. Honestly, I feel like it sets them up for like business opportunities for the working world. Even for those who do go pro, it doesn't stop. So honestly, like, this is real life and real practice for them, probably that they could get better than even like going to class and hearing a professor lecture and things like that. Like, this is like real life stuff that they're kind of thrown into that prepares them for, you know, the next chapter in their life. So,
I mean, one of the things that I'm very curious about is, like, from a video production standpoint, you know, there's three phases in a sense, right? Pre-production, production, post-production. I guess there's four. Delivery is now an extra step a lot of times. But what is your favorite part of the process, and why do you like that particular part so much?
I feel like there's two. So I do mix music and songs. So sometimes when I get a project ahead of time, I'm like, ooh, these songs can be mixed with this to go with this theme. So that is one part of the process that I really like. If I'm creating a piece with a one of a kind, like, piece of sound that's never been done or heard of before. And the other part is while I'm editing. I've talked to some of my other creative friends about this, because I asked them, like, where in the editing process do you get your ideas? Like, some it's before, some it's after they've edited the whole thing, and they're like, oh, I can add this. But for me, it's during. So each clip that I lay down, I'm like, oh, let me add this, or let me add this sound. So for the most part, most of the time, my sound is laid down, and I think I have all the sound effects and things under it until I start editing and putting the visuals on top. And it's like, oh, this is where the story comes together piece by piece. Like, for example, I put the LUT on there before because I just can't look at it and continue to edit without the color on there. So that's probably my favorite part. Like, oh my gosh, let me put this on here, or without the video even being, you know, completed yet. And it just continues to grow and build. So
I love that you drive with audio first. I thought Brock might jump in with that, because we talk about that.
It's the most important part of video.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is.
But it's still interesting to hear, because that is not the way that I edit. And that's why it's so interesting to hear how different people do their job, and the focus on music, sound design, and laying that all out is cool to hear.
Oh yeah. I feel like if the visuals can look the best ever, but if the sound isn't there, it's gonna ruin the whole thing.
When I'm here, and I'm thinking about D Rose, the D Rose connection, because he just, you know, they celebrated him with his D Rose night. When you were breaking, and it was so formative for you, it seems, when you were breaking down those scenes, you mentioned earlier how you like remembered the scene setters. Like, were you screenshotting things and collecting them at certain places, or was it just like from memory, like, and remembering kind of the storylines and how they broke it down? Because I feel like, to Justin's point, we all have different ways of doing things. But when you're actually building the story, how do you then decide what to do first? Like, do you start at the very beginning? Do you start with the end in mind?
Right, yeah. So when I was watching those, I would like watch them back in the day on the desktop computer and be on my phone and type in my notes like, oh, this was cool, this is how they started. But nowadays, obviously films and things start off different. Like, they'll start off with the conflict at the very beginning to draw you in, and then it dies down, settles in, and they start from the scenics to things like that. And then some are classic, the conflict is in the middle, and then, you know, so during that time, yeah, I would just take notes and kind of be like, oh, this scene is cool, you know, and things like that. But as far as like the layout, I don't know if I thought too much about it. Really just was intrigued by how the story was told and how they did it, how they set up this scene to, for him to tell this part of his story, you know, about. So, yeah.
So as an athlete, especially, you know, college pros, you're watching film, right? And you're breaking it down. How much of your experience as an athlete has helped you in your career of like preparation, whether it's pre-production while you're doing it, or even from an ideas standpoint, like how much of that training over the course of time that you were a basketball player and ran track that you take into what you do now?
Yeah, I've talked to my mom about this a few times. And a lot of people say this too, like athletes sometimes are one of the hardest working, you know, workers, because obviously, you know, no, for obvious reasons, get up early, have to fight for a spot and stuff like that. So I feel like from a mentality aspect, being an athlete has helped me, like, stayed up extra those late nights just because I want this video to look really cool. I want to show it to my boss. I want it, you know, instead of going to bed and being like, oh, I'll work on it tomorrow. Or just like that extra drive and determination. I'm not saying like it's competition in the workplace, but you know, it's silent. Yeah. So it's like, all right, I don't want this person to take my position. I don't want this person to take my spot. I'm not trying to come off the bench. Like I'm trying to stay on the floor the entire time, and make my mark, you know? So I feel like from that aspect, if I was to sum it all up, I would say like the mentality helped. And it's a lot different, especially like when you're up those late nights and you're really trying to grind it out. So
now that you're hopefully getting a little more sleep than you were in your earlier days, I'm curious, what do you do when you're not working? Like what are ways that you kind of de-stress and relax and unwind?
So I have a puppy. His Aww. Name's Kodo. He's a teacup poodle. He's about 4 pounds.
Stop it.
Yes.
So cute.
So he's about the size of a Gatorade bottle. That's who I hang out with the most. He's my best friend. When it's hot, we'll be outside playing. Even when it's cold, he wants to jump in the snow and stuff. Honestly, that is mostly what I do outside of work. I hang out with Kodo and, of course, all my friends, and everyone always wants to be around him. That and I got to shoot hoops, play basketball. I used to play against football players, but they're so rough. Like, broke all of my nails one time. No. Yeah, I'm like left Ow. Bleeding. I'm like, all right, I'm not playing with y'all no more. So I'll play against the other athletes or like kids on grounds. But definitely shooting hoops on the outdoor courts with the double rims. So yeah. One of those.
If you can hoop on the double rim, you're a hooper. So
I'm assuming you don't Euro step anymore, though. Is that accurate?
No. Yeah. No.
Oh, no. I was gonna ask, if you're ever worried while you're shooting, if an injury is ever going to prop up, because there have been some serious injuries while doing our jobs.
Like, so, you know, true. It seems like,
but you're on the sidelines. I'll never forget when I was in college, I was shooting underneath a basket standing up, because Husker Vision used to make us stand up to shoot. It was a whole weird thing. Mm. And I got my legs taken out from under me and my grip grabbed the camera. But didn't save me. It was Matt Turner, my God. Justin.
I mean,
grabbed the camera and saved the camera, but I fell.
Shout out to the grip doing their job, right? Yeah.
Protect the camera. Hard to replace, yeah.
Yeah. Brock, we can replace Brock. No, yeah. Just kidding. Good
equipment, though.
Look at those knees, Brock. So you talked about like all of the stuff that you did to get into, like from college to in grad school. But you also still have a busy schedule because you're an adjunct professor at a school. So kind of talk about how you incorporate that with the day-to-day, with everything else, and still find time to like rest and balance.
Yeah. So how I got into that, still reaching out and continue on with those relationships that I built at Shenandoah. I reached out to our chair at Shenandoah, my former professor, Dr. Gina D'Addario. And I was like, hey, I would love to teach. Because when I was in school at Shenandoah, we didn't have Premiere. We edited it on iMovie. So I didn't know how to edit until I went to Wake Forest. And I learned how to edit in Premiere. And I just wanted to provide help with those resources, help, you know, create opportunities, have guest speakers on who, you know, the kids can grab their contact information, just really get like push them and help them get a head start and be further along than I was when I graduated. So I asked her and she was like, yeah, what do you want the name of it to be? Like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I mean, I would just love to just show them how to edit video. And she was like, okay, well, we can call it sports video. And during that time, I had just got a promotion at UVA. And she was like, all right, let's start next semester. And I was like, whoa, I just got promoted. Can we wait like a second? She was like, all right, spring semester. And I said, okay. So that's kind of how I got into that. And I absolutely love it. If there might be a time where, you know, I would want to be a 10-year professor and do it full time when I feel like, you know, I've done all I can. I feel accomplished in this part of the industry. But my goal, and I tell the kids this all the time, I want you to be further than I was when I left, and I want you to surpass me. So, you know, whenever you need someone to talk to, a mentor or anything, when you're further than me, I'm still here. Like, I'm not going to be jealous or mad. Like, I want you to do that. That's why I wanted to teach at Shenandoah, because they didn't have the resources we had. So now I'm like, y'all need Premiere, you need Lightroom, you need InDesign. We're not editing on iMovie. And when we have these guest speakers come on here, each and every one of you need to ask a question, and you're going to save their contact information, whether you don't think you need it now, you will later. And before class ends every semester, well, they have my phone number from the beginning, but I always reiterate, if you need help, it doesn't have to be in the sports industry. It can be anywhere. Like, I want to help, and, you know, I want to be a proud mom at the end and, you know, be like, hey, where are you at? What you doing? Oh, can you help me get a, you know, a position, you know? But that's probably, I love it low key more than what I do now. So I feel like I eventually might, you know, steer in that career path when I feel like, you know, I know enough people to continue to have guest speakers on there to continue to help the kids grow and get to where they want to go. So,
well, Justin would be a nice guest if I'm all of us, actually, if you're okay. Looking for guests to talk to your class, especially Karina, because that's what she does.
Okay, cool. Yeah, they're on Zoom. Class is on Zoom, so.
Even
Tuesdays at 6.
On my calendar. I love it.
Sign me up.
You mentioned, right, at this phase and thinking about what the future might look like to you once you've achieved, you know, certain level of success. Like, at this point in your career, what does success mean to you and how do you define it? Because I think we all have our own version of success in the creative industry. I'm curious what yours is.
For me personally, I feel like as long as you're continuing to, I don't want to say surprise yourself, but surprise yourself and mm-hmm. grow. And really just that, I feel like that's success. Because I feel like once your love is gone or you're not trying to get better or see who's doing what, you know, it might not be something for you anymore. So honestly, if you just continue to keep growing, perfecting your craft, your personal, you know, way, style, way that you edit, your creativity, not trying to be like anyone else, not trying to compare yourself to anyone else, where they're at your age or what they're doing right now. That is success, mentally too, because that plays a big part in day to day.
So you're talking about your successes. What is something that you've had success with or most proud moment that you've had working in sports?
I think I probably have two. So one of them is very like kind of deep and touching, but when three of our players lost their lives a few years ago, during that time, I had been at UVA maybe a year and a half. So I gained a close relationship with those individuals. And what was a proud moment for me was when I was tasked with creating a piece just for those families. No one else could see it. I wasn't allowed to send it to anyone. And that was kind of like a pivotal, heart, you know, touching moment for me. Because first I'm using my gift that the Lord gave me to kind of continue the legacy of those three individuals. And I had the pleasure of recording and documenting the last few moments of their lives that their parents or family members wasn't able to do. And I was able to kind of help and gift them with that little video that I created for them to watch over and over again and watch, you know, some of the last couple of years of their son's lives. So that was a proud moment for me. And another one was being invited to the Women's Final Four. Obviously, growing up as a little girl, basketball was life. And of course, with every kid that plays a sport, you think you're going to go pro and all this stuff. But being invited to Women's Final Four was kind of like the biggest stage that I had ever been on in women's basketball. It was also a pivotal moment in history, made history, you know, during that time with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese that year, not in the Final Four. But it was really cool and kind of came full circle for me. And it was cool because I was on the court the whole time. I wasn't fighting for my position. I wasn't on the bench. I wasn't, you know, I played an important role and I was able to celebrate with whatever team and watch history being made. So personally, that was a really cool moment for me, kind of came full circle. And yeah.
So obviously having your background in sports is a huge advantage almost all the time. Has there ever been a time where your background in sports has maybe been a disadvantage or didn't help you the way you thought it might help you in this career?
Yeah. So I do freelance. I have my own production company. It's called Storyteller Films. It's an LLC. And when I started doing weddings, photography for that, I was shooting like upward. And I learned that only in sports, you pretty much do that because it's a heroic shot. And when I showed my photos to someone who is a wedding photographer, he was like, oh, no, you don't do that. It's different than sports. So through freelance, I learned a lot. Like, okay, with this, I can't shoot like this. Like I do for sports, do heroic shots, go really close up, pan around. You know, you have to shoot a little differently. So I would say that's probably a moment or a time when I first started with my freelance business, learning you got to shoot things a little differently and edit a little differently. Not everything has to be quick cut, a whole bunch of effects and things in it, like, you know, other things sometimes outside of sports, they just want it simple and want a story to be told. So
what everybody kind of has their favorite thing to do, right? Whether it's storytelling or like high action or like, what types of work would you rather work on? Would it be like documentary storytelling or would it be like highlights or would it be non-sports? Like what do you find the most exciting for you?
Honestly, storytelling. So when I got my master's at Wake Forest in sports media and storytelling, before I left, our professors told us, although we want to be storytellers and have our own production companies and things like that, it's probably not the best career to start it off in because you're not well known, you're not going to make much money. So to actually start off in like sports or something that has short form content where, or, you know, work under an organization, a team and things like that. So that's kind of how I started at UVA, and I began to fell in love with the short form stuff. Then as time went on and, you know, as I got older and I'm like, actually, you know, I think I want to go back to the storytelling, but it all stems back to when I tore my ACLs. Like, originally, that's what I wanted to do from the very beginning. And then, you know, as you all know, like, when you enter different chapters in your life and things like that, your likings of things change. But I think at the end of the day, like, it still stays the same. And as far as, like, the type of subject or type of, like, stories that I would like to tell or want to tell, honestly, about the Lord, I told my mom, if there was any opportunity that I could have, like, with a big name pastor or church or something like that, like, I love telling stories like that, where I can tell of his goodness, tell help someone bring their testimony to light, help someone, you know, tell their story, and glorify him. Like, that's probably, you know, a dream of mine.
It's interesting that you say that, because this is going to sound bad, but God knows where my heart is. Okay. So unless I'm doing like a project for church, like, I am not on the streaming team. I'm not shooting camera at church. I actually use that as kind of a getaway from like filming, but I do projects at my church. They're just okay. Not, like, as often. But the reason I bring that up is, like, currently, do you find yourself, like, immersing your day-to-day into that? Or is it kind of, like, some separate? And I've done this, like, from the beginning, I kind of had that mindset. It's like, okay, I'm going to have some separation factor.
Between, but yeah.
How's that for you?
Honestly, so when I was just in football, I made our motivationals. No one else saw it but the team. And mm-hmm. Coach Elliott is very, very religious. But the team also, like, wanted hip-hop at the same time. So I loved doing those because I was able to kind of merge mm-hmm. both hip-hop culture and cater to Coach Elliott with something about the Lord and Christ in there. So... day to day, I do try. Now, working in athletics, completely different. So I'm not able to do something like that. But when I was in football, that is something that I absolutely loved. And when I was making the motivationals, I tried to kind of merge into, oh, I made this song. It has Kirk Franklin mixed with Meek Mill in it. Can we push it on social? And then that's when I would get backlash. Like, oh, no, that's too, like, you know.
Right.
So I've tried, but yeah, kind of different.
I wanted to ask an inverse of what Brock asked you, because I love the answer that you gave, that they're getting outside of sports and doing something like wedding photography totally changes your perspective. And that's awesome that freelance opportunity can provide that, to give you a different perspective of something you do day in and day out. Is there anything that you've done that you've brought back into what you do on your day-to-day in sports that kind of opened your eyes or changed your perspective on an approach or something along those lines?
I would say photography and videography too. So photography, not doing as many heroic looking shots, but maybe getting more full body or using other objects in the photo and things like that, or for video, slowing down my cutting and tell, you can still have a cool video without having a bunch of effects or quick cutting and stuff like that, without it really being a story to be told to. So that's what I learned from doing freelance into sports. So someone else also told me that, like, you don't have to put a whole bunch of stuff in a video for it to look pretty cool. And I guess it didn't stick with me until I started making content for things that wasn't sports. And I was like, oh, this video kind of looks decent. It looks cool. I could probably make something like this in sports too. So
All right, we're going to play a quick game to make you quick on your feet. So you got 30 seconds to name as many things as possible, and we're going to give you a subject. So you're in video production, obviously working a lot of games, travel, all that thing. In 30 seconds, name as many items that you must have with you to be like on your A game.
Okay, start now.
Hold on. 3, 2, 1. Go.
Tripod, monopod, batteries, lavalier mics and Rode mic, camera, long lens, short lens, SD cards, charger, extension cord to put the chargers in, laptop charger, headphones.
Time's up. Okay. you named a lot of stuff. Like, typically some people only get like 4 or 5 things off and they're like, oh, I'm overthinking this. So going into kind of game mode, like quick responses. So like you travel with teams or different things, or you're covering events at home. Which do you prefer, home or away events?
I would say away, because the scenes are different. You get a little more creative because you haven't been to the stadium or arena before. Or maybe you have. It's your second time there. Just different. Home games can get redundant sometimes. And kind of shooting the same stuff.
Okay. What do you feel like are some changes or additions? Like, the world of sports, especially college sports, are changing dramatically every single year. What are some changes or additions or subtractions would you like to see in the college video world?
Honestly, first, I would say more creatives, because we need more. I feel like every school does need more creatives to make great content. Something to change. I don't know.
That's a good one to start with, is more bodies, so that, you know, you won't have to be up at 2, 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning as an individual trying to balance everything. Yeah. Right.
But not only that, but like being able to make more content, make better content, like, you know, put more stuff out, with more people, like whether it's in game for social media, just for recruits to see, just for this group of people to see.
Yeah. I would vote for less content, but I'm that person. So as I mentioned at the top of the show, during the month of February, we do take an opportunity to celebrate and spotlight for Black creators in the college sports space. So you've been in the space for some time. This is a multi-question kind of question. Is one, are there any creatives that you looked up to or had conversations with that helped you in transitioning from, you know, being kind of a dreamer looking at what these were? Or is there anyone that you kind of had that relationship with now that you can call and, you know, learn things from?
Definitely growing up, someone I looked up to, Maria Taylor, isn't like necessarily creative, but you know, she
is
in that spotlight.
She has a background in it.
okay, shoot. So yeah, as far as like seeing a first face like that, she was definitely it for me, and I got to meet her in person. Her story sounds very similar to mine. I feel like a lot of our stories as women of color are probably very, very similar. So it does help when you're hearing it from someone of her caliber, like, oh, okay, you know, I'm going through the same thing, like, I'm all right, you know. And then as far as now, of course, seeing Chanel, I'm very close with Jamal Simmons, who's creative director at Virginia Tech. He's someone, him and his girlfriend are people that I talk to the most all the time, not just about creative, but about life period. He's definitely my brother, someone that's always going to have my back. And it helps when you have a little creative, you know, circle of friends, to kind of help you navigate through. So yeah, him and of course, like Jalen, Echol, Alexis Pitchford at NCAA. She's one of the first Black creatives. That's a woman that I met ever in person. We passed by each other when we were at the NFL Combine. And she was like, "Are you Taylor? I follow you on social media." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, yeah." And she was like, "Are you the only and ever like Black woman in college football? Like, I don't know anybody else." And I was like, "I don't know, but it's just cool to see somebody who looks like me, you know, with what she's doing." So I was like, "I don't know too many other, you know, women of color in the NFL. You know, she does freelance for them besides Chanel. And like, as far as videographers, I don't know that comes to my mind besides Alexis." So yeah, just honestly, people like that now. So
awesome. And I'll give you a Maria Taylor story after the pod.
Okay.
Kind of the inverse of that is, what advice would you give to, you know, we kind of talked about this with the athletes, but for people who are looking to get in the industry that are Black creatives or aspiring or don't even know that this is an industry that they may have an opportunity, what advice would you give the next generation of Black creatives?
Well, for me, like what I've heard, you know, getting into this industry is, a Black woman shouldn't be in your position. You're too young to be in this position. You're not good enough to be here. I've had someone tell me, "You don't know what you're doing," and they spat in my face. So for the next generation, I was just telling them, "Girl, keep going." And my mom always tells me, "If you're gonna cry, cry, do it behind closed doors. You toss your hair, check your nails, and you keep going." And the people who do say those things to you are just intimidated. And honestly, they see something in you that maybe you don't see yet. And they're trying to keep you from getting to where you're supposed to be, or they know that you're going to surpass them, or, you know. So honestly, anyone who gives you some type of crazy energy like that, take it as a compliment. Always, my mom's always told me that. And it's like, "Oh, girl, you're a threat." Like, that's okay. Thank you for telling me a Black woman shouldn't be in this. I shouldn't be in this position. As a Black woman, I shouldn't be in this position. Thank you for telling me that, because I'm gonna make sure there's more. There's more in this position. Thank you. So that's really the short form piece of advice. Girl, just keep going. Keep your head up and just make sure you're surrounded by people who do celebrate you, who do appreciate you, because that small circle of people can definitely help push you forward and block out whoever else is saying something negative. But take it as a compliment if they want to say something.
Shout out to your mom for that advice. Thank you, Taylor, for definitely spending some time with us and giving us insight to your story and your journey. And look forward to everything that is to come and your million endeavors that you make.
Oh, thank you. Thank you guys for having me. Hopefully I said a few things that y'all can use, but this is my first podcast, so thanks for giving me the opportunity to.
No, it's great.
You tackled it like a here. Pro, yeah.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day.
Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives.
If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.